Chairman, if the council would look in tab one, item number three. It's a memo about our operations handbook on four different policies. As you recall, at two council meetings ago, tab one, number three.
No. When are we going to do deeming?
Do what?
Deeming?
No.
Okay. Sorry.
And as you recall, a couple council meetings ago, we approved any number of policies, several, and we delayed advisory panel enforcement sectors, and we came up with a new one for your consideration at this meeting. We delayed approval at advisory panel because the chairman wanted to look at a new way of doing business and having one AP. Most of the feedback we got from council members and the industry was that, you know, we like the way the panels operate now with individual panels for each species. So the executive committee met and is recommending no changes to the current way we do advisory panels. So it's included under this tab one, number three. There's no change to advisory panel policy. There will still be a AP for each species committee. The second thing we looked at that we delayed till this meeting was improvement of the enforcement policy. We made it very simple. If you look inside the handout, and it says that during the development of our fishery management plan, the council and its oversight committees shall be guided by the appended enforcement considerations prepared by NOAA, General Counsel, Office of Law Enforcement, and the U.S. Coast Guard. The purpose is to enhance the likelihood of approving effective fishery management programs that accomplish the goals and objectives associated with council actions. This was prepared by the NIMS and the Coast Guard and is used to educate new council members in Washington. And what we're saying with this new policy is that the council and its committees will be guided by this document, and that will be our policy. The third thing, which I'll ask Phil Herring to come to the table, is under sector policy. If you remember sector policy, there were a couple points. A member, the executive committee wanted to add the current executive committee policy, no, the current council policy on sectors says that each FMP should state that vessels can only be in one sector within that FMP in any fishing year. Furthermore, a vessel cannot be in more than one sector in different FMPs in the same year. That's our current policy. I brought to the council two council meetings ago that that the executive committee recommended that a vessel be allowed in more than one sector, and there was a lot of discussion, and the staff was directed to develop a white paper on what are the pros and cons of changing that policy. And Phil, who was the analyst on the old ad hoc sector committee, did a white paper on the pros and cons, and that was handed out this afternoon. It's got an S on it, and it says issues paper reconsidering multiple sector enrollment policy. I'll have him go through that, and he did that at executive committee 2 weeks ago, and after reviewing his work here, the executive committee is recommending that we keep the policy like it is. But I'll let him look at I'll let him go through that real briefly. Go ahead, Phil.
Thank you. The white paper is constructed in a way. First, we laid out what we I wrote this, but I did it with the help of staff. I consulted all the technical staff on this. What were the primary benefits or advantages to allowing a vessel to participate in more than one sector in the same year across FMPs, and what are the disadvantages? Just looking at the first page, it's clear that the list of advantages is a lot shorter. But in a nutshell, what that is that if sectors are advantageous in achieving efficiencies and so on, it follows that allowing a vessel to participate in more sectors would compound that benefit, that in fact, you know, they could achieve efficiencies in a number of fisheries. The disadvantages pretty much boil down to issues of complexity. And in a nutshell, sectors we've had in the groundfish plan for a couple of years, still working the bugs out on those. We have not established sectors and had them functioning in other FMPs yet, and there are a number of issues that might come up. And then once you begin to overlap sectors participation, you get more questions. And rather than going through the entire discussion, I just point out that on the third page, I've summarized the questions that are outstanding. Now, these are questions, some of which may be easily answered with a discussion, and some of them are more complicated, but they are questions that the staff feels deserve attention. And if they can be answered quickly, then the council can get through this fairly quickly. But I think that there, you'll see if you read them that some of them are require a considerable amount of thought and some analysis. And so what it boils down to is what we presented with the to the executive committee, and I guess they're in front of you today too, sort of three options that you could have right now. One being to keep the current policy as is for the time being, get some experience in sectors, in individual fisheries, spend some time answering these questions. A second option would be to go into this incrementally, sort of stick your toe in, and allow it in two FMPs with some overlap and keep it simple, but begin to get a hands-on addressing of the issues. And the third would be to simply remove that statement from the policy and implicitly allow multiple sector participation as soon as FMPs have sector programs up and running. After consideration of this, the executive committee recommended, for now, keeping the current policy, but I think they also indicated that these questions are not going to just get shelved, that in various committees, and if the sector committee is reconvened, that they will begin to try and answer some of these questions and get through this.
Thanks, Phil. The other issue on sectors is that, if you recall our discussions during the groundfish committee, there was some questions about can a monkfish person join a groundfish sector or something like that. And there was a whole bunch of discussion about the current definition of a sector. And the current definition says a sector means a group of persons holding limited access vessel permits who have volunteered to enter into contract. And although I talked to most folks that were on the ad hoc sector committee, including staff, the intent of that was that you had to have a limited access permit in the species that was forming the sector. And although it doesn't say that. So the second part of this discussion today is to change this policy to specifically say that a sector means a group of persons holding limited access vessel permits in the fishery management plan through which the sector is being formed. Okay, that was the intent of the ad hoc committee, and that's the way it is in groundfish, I think. And so that's that. So, and then the fourth one is basically the service has now provided standards for regular B-day special access programs and the U.S.-Canada Haddock special access program and gear types for regular B-Day program. It's 50% more effective than other gear or 5% bycatch standard of regulated species of concern. And so those two standards now exist, and the council said that either the executive committee or the full council could decide which experiments go to the regional administrator for approval as gears in those areas. So if you look at, we have two of them that we reviewed that are on the agenda for tomorrow to review. But in reviewing them, we found out that it's a lot more difficult than you think, that it isn't just a matter of putting an experiment in front of the executive committee and saying approve it or disapprove it. There's a lot of work that's involved, and there's a lot of technical work, policy work, et cetera. So we came up with this process, and the process for approval of additional gears, whether it's in a B-Day program or our Eastern U.S. Canada SAP, is the first thing before the council considers recommending a new gear. The proposed gear must have been subject of a completed experiment. So there must be an experiment first, and the results reviewed by the Research Steering Committee. Okay? If the gear meets further consideration based on the RSC review of the quality research, a formal request must be made. So first it's got to be reviewed by the RSC, an experiment. Then it's got to be, once the RSC reviews it as an experiment, and it's completed its review, then the principal investigator has got to recommend that it be used in management. Then it should go to the groundfish plan development team to do a technical analysis to make sure it does meet the standards. Someone's got to do that. It took our staff the better part of a couple days to review two experiments to see if they met the new standards. So there's some work involved. And it was the staff, not the PDT. And then the PDT brings it to the groundfish committee, and then the groundfish committee will recommend to the executive committee or the full council whether or not new gear should be allowed in the U.S., Canada, or regular B-Day program. So it's kind of a convoluted process, but it's not as easy as just saying, here's an experiment. You know, go ahead, executive committee, look at it and determine whether we should recommend implementing it to the regional administrator. It takes a lot of technical work to determine that. So that's our process for that. Now, we had two experiments on record. One is the eliminator trawl that Captain Rule mentioned this morning, all completed, all reviewed by the RSC, recommending a good technical experiment. It was reviewed by staff, and it meets all the standards. You'll get that information tomorrow. We reviewed the hook Norbait experiment and determined that does not meet the standards, but could meet the standards with a little more detailed experimental data and presentation. So you'll get that information tomorrow. But the staff did that, and the staff reviewed those two experiments because, quite frankly, the PDT and the Groundfish Committee was too busy to spend 2 days looking at that stuff, preparing for this council meeting and all the work. So, you know, we did that if you wanted to, you know, get those two experiments looked at and recommended or not recommended to the RA at this council meeting. So you'll have a staff review, but it was, you know, it's contrary to this policy. So keep that in mind, or maybe amend this policy to say if the PDT is too busy, the staff can make the recommendation to the full council. Does that make sense? Okay. So those are the four things, the four different staff proposals, four different policy proposals for the operations handbook that we're recommending you approve today.
Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's just get these straightened out quickly. There shouldn't be any problem here, particularly with the sector one. I was on the sector, ad hoc sector committee, and I remember our intent very clearly. So I'd like to move that we add the words "in the fishery management plan through which the sector is being formed" to that first paragraph as it is on the sheet that we've been given. That was the intent of the committee, and I would like to make that motion.
Second by Gaethel. Where it's on page two.
That's on page one of the sector policy proposal. The shaded area on the top left-hand side.
Okay. I don't have it on.
It's an old one.
Okay.
Do you have tab one?
Yeah. I was working off of this or something.
It's in tab one.
Dr. Pierce.
All right, I misunderstood. When Paul began his presentation, I thought that the executive committee had looked over the sector policy and that that wording was already in there, and they were recommending that we keep it in there and not go to multiple sectors. So am I correct?
The multiple sectors is not a change. The wording in here was like it was approved when the ad hoc committee did it on multiple sectors.
I'm still confused then. What the existing sector policy?
The existing sector. See the shaded area there on page 3 of 3. That's what's approved right now. Only one. You can only be in one sector. That's approved.
Okay. Then.
So what we're changing is that in order to be in a sector, you have to have a limited access permit for that sector.
There are two things, Dave.
I don't follow the motion. The council adopt the following language in the sector policy. That seems to me that the motion is being made to include the boldface, the shaded text in the policy, but that shaded text is already in the policy.
I can clarify, Paul. There are two separate things. The one is the multiple sector issue. And that's shaded in the policy so that you can find it, because it's kind of buried in there. And the executive committee is recommending no change. That's the language that was there. On the first page, in the definition of the sector, is a shaded area where that actually is language that the executive committee is recommending being added to the definition of sector to clarify what the original intent was. So there are two separate things. They're both shaded. One is shaded with no change, and the other is shaded with a change. So I suppose that's confusing.
Very
what
much
this
so.
Motion is addressing only the definition component of it.
Okay, but I have to follow you, Phil. In my copy, I see a shaded sentence, partial of a sentence, in the definition of a sector, and then on the last page, I see a paragraph that is shaded. Nothing else is shaded. So what is new and what is being proposed as a change?
The shading in the definition of a sector is the added language that's being recommended for a change. The shading in the other section is just to draw your attention to that language that is the subject of this conversation in terms of multiple sectors. But the executive committee is recommending no change, and that language is the same as it was before.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions on this section? Paul, is your intent to do it by section by section? Okay. John.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. The I guess if we're trying to clarify what the definition of a sector is, the language that is being proposed, I don't really have a problem with it. It's the same language that is used under formation of sectors, which, if you read that first sentence, I'll read it. Each FMP may adopt a sector program through a plan amendment to enable limited access permit holders in the respective fishery to form sectors. So I think we had already clarified it as far as who can form a sector, and if we're going to repeat it in the definition, for clarity, that's fine. But I just would point out that through the wisdom of the ad hoc committee, that was already put in there. And yeah, sure. And due to the leadership of the ad hoc committee, but just a point of order, if I could, is since these are recommendations from the executive committee, do they need to go through the council for a motion and a second of the motion? Isn't that a standing committee?
I think as Paul pointed out, the executive committee doesn't put together motions. We make recommendations.
Thank you very much.
Dave Gaethel.
I think John Nelson's correct, and if we probably had this policy sitting in front of us on January 24th, we wouldn't have wasted the last hour and a half of the day having this very discussion about who could be in the sector. We spent a great deal of time debating whether somebody who didn't have a limited access permit could join a limited access sector. I think we do need this clarification just to make it crystal clear that this is exactly what we intend, that if, for example, you only hold a red crab permit, you can't join a groundfish sector. And because we just spent an hour and a half on January 24th having that debate. So I would say that we should add it, and then there will be no ambiguity whatsoever.
Just while the chair is coming, I'll point out a number of people have been confused by the existing definition, even though it's in the other part of the text, including people on the staff initially. We've had the same conversations, so it would help to clarify your intent.
Any other comments, questions? Are there any comments from the audience? Seeing none, I will come back to the council. Any further comments? I will call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Yep. 13 4 opposed. 1 abstention. 1. Dr. Pierce.
All right. We have an issues paper before us prepared by Phil with assistance of the staff, and there are some significant advantage to multiple sector enrollment as described, especially in the last sentence in the paragraph that describes the advantages. We do have a sector committee that still exists. Am I correct? It still exists? Or was it disbanded? I lost track of the sector. It's gone? All right. Well, someone had suggested, I don't know whether it was John or whether it was you, Paul, that we could meet again. Right. So I would I'd make a motion that this issues paper, I would make a motion that the issues paper regarding reconsideration of multiple sector enrollment be referred to the sector committee to address the questions raised therein.
For a second.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the sector committee is going to be reformulated. I don't think I have to put that in the motion, but the move that the issues paper regarding reconsideration of multiple sector enrollment be referred to the sector committee to address the questions raised therein. Or reconstituted sector committee, however we should reference it. The questions are, the advantages are too significant. We should not ignore the fact that they do exist, but there are some significant disadvantages. Many are there before us. Therefore, why not begin the process of at least taking a close look at those disadvantages? Specifically, can we answer the questions that have been posed? Who's going to do that work? I suppose, reconstituted sector committee. So that's the reason for my motion.
Is there a second? Seconded by Rodney. Paul Howard.
Yes, to that point, David, I've talked about this with John, and I would like to get that committee back up and running, and we talked about it at the last committee meeting, but with all the different priorities, whether it's a skate amendment and all the other amendments going on, I'm having a hard time trying to figure out how we're going to do it. And, you know, with staff resources to support another committee. So, but we are talking about it, how to do it.
David?
Well, the pleasure of the chair, if this was to pass, I suppose it could be put on the back burner for a while until the executive committee determines, or you, Paul, determine that indeed there is some vacuum into which staff could be sucked, and then they could deal with this issue. If sector management is going to be on our agendas for a while to come, and certainly groundfish sectors will be on our agenda for a while to come, then it would be worthwhile for us to eventually address these questions, since it stands to reason some group are going to raise this question of multiple enrollment because they'll seize upon the advantages that have been documented here and want the council to let it happen. So I would like to be in a position to address those individuals or groups when they offer up that that request. I'd like to be prepared for it. So again, it's up to you, Mr. Chairman, as to how you would like to proceed.
Well, I think we need to have a little more discussion on this issue and on this motion. I'd rip, and then I have Jim Odlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier, before I had to take over as chair, I was going to make a comment on this. The Groundfish Committee, in some of our deliberations concerning Amendment 16 and sectors, passed a motion to recommend that the council strike from the sector policy the sentence which is, furthermore, a vessel cannot be in more than one sector and different FMPs in the same year. So I, from the standpoint of the Groundfish Committee, I would have to do it on my own, I would support this motion to have the sector committee look at this paper and reconsider some of the issues.
Jim Olick.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go a little further than that, and I'm going to offer a motion to amend Dr. Pierce's motion in that the sentence, furthermore, a vessel cannot be in more than one sector and different FMPs in the same year, be removed. And that's the motion. And the rationale is, I think there are going to be numerous times and opportunities when we will want to consider allowing vessels in more than in more than one sector. And I would think that this would be up to the FMP of each plan. For instance, the Groundfish Committee, or the Groundfish Plan, could allow vessels to be in a groundfish sector and a monkfish sector, for instance. And those are complementary. And to exclude that, I think, would be a mistake. Now, an FMP such as herring may say something different. Each FMP should have the decision to say, we don't think it would be complementary for our FMP to have people in a herring sector at the same time they're in a whiting sector. So I think it should be left to the Species Committee to decide whether they want, under their policy, to allow vessels in more than one sector. And if we put this sentence in, we don't leave that ability up to the Species Committee and the needs of the day, for instance. So that's the reason for my motion.
Dave Preble? Thank you. So now we have a motion to amend. Dave Gaethel?
Yeah. I get back to what I said earlier today about building the cart and finding the horse. Now we're trying to build a Rolls Royce. We will need the horse then. That's the good news. I think we should keep this simple. We haven't even demonstrated that we can run a whole bunch of real sectors at once in one plant. Never mind run them across multiple plants. I think we ought to see if we can, you know, as I said before, let's build a cart and see if we can make the wheels turn before we start trying to build a Rolls Royce. And for that reason, I'm going to oppose both the amended motion and the main motion, because I think we should stick to getting it working in one plan. And if we can get it working in one, then we can consider in a future action amending our operations plan and trying to make it work in multiple ones. But right now, we can't even get it working in one.
Anyone else in the council? John Nelson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that right now we are allowing folks to enter into different FMPs and different sectors. Clearly that was the intent. You want to go in scallops and groundfish, you could do that. I can't think of too many within an FMP that you'd have multiple sectors. Except as Jimmy just pointed out, that it's probably monkfish. Maybe there's other examples out there that I can't think of right now. But I think perhaps if that's the only stumbling block, that maybe you ought to, you know, just give that some thought for the groundfish ought to think about that a little bit longer and come back at another time to suggest a revision that's more specific to, for example, the groundfish plan. Because right now, if you change the policy, it's, you know, I don't know what else that means. But if I do know that it means monkfish, you know, and whatever else is in there, then it's narrowed down a little bit more and it gives some clarity to what people feel that they can do. So I'd suggest that in this particular one, it might be worth waiting on it. I don't think you necessarily ought to vote it down. You might want to just table it and give some more consideration to it. I'm not going to move to table it because I'd like whatever discussion is going to take place is fine with me.
Well, I can give you a little more insight from the executive committee discussion. One of the other possibilities that we saw was that you could have a scallop sector that would want to bring in a groundfish boat to increase or enhance its yellowtail quota, because we know yellowtail is a problem in the scallop fishery. Down the road, you know, thinking things through, yellowtail certainly limits scallop activity. So we foresaw that was a possibility. To Jim Odlin's point, if I might, leaving it up to one FMP or the other, you could get into a situation where the groundfish plan says no monkfish boats can be in the groundfish sector, but the monkfish plan says you can have groundfish boats in the monkfish sector. And you could have boats that are caught in one sector and want to jump into another sector after the lists have been submitted. If you think about how sectors work right now, now we're being told we have to submit on March 1st. Can't pull out after June 1st. And I think as the service gets more and more comfortable with how many potential sectors we're going to have, as more and more plans potentially bring on the possibility of allowing sectors, those types of issues will get worked out, and the individual operator can make the decision. Well, I can't be in a groundfish sector and access monkfish through a monkfish sector, but I can be in a monkfish sector and access groundfish. we've talked round and round about this, and it wasn't that the executive committee wanted to prohibit multiple sector activity on the same vessel. It was that, as the position paper brings up, there's more thought that's required into the potential advantages and disadvantages. Now, to the point of whether or not we can constitute a sector committee or reconstitute the sector committee right now, in talking to Paul, he's scratching his head and sweating a little bit, not knowing how we could pull that off this year, unless I'm wrong. Yeah, he's struggling to figure that one out. So I just wanted to tell you that was a level of the discussion at the executive committee. Now, you could just say, look, the policy is what it is. It says what it says, regardless of intent or otherwise. We voted it through the way it's written, and we should stick with it and just move on. John?
To follow up, Mr. Chairman, I mean, even the U.S. Constitution, I think, was amended eventually. Therefore, I think that, you know, there's no sacred non-amendable items out here. I think, though, you're already seeing that the stumbling that's taking place around sectors because of trying to think through everything. And I would suggest that maybe this one is, except for the clarification, which is the language is already in there, and I think that that's perfectly fine. But you might want to delay the overall discussion until you had your discussion on sectors, and maybe that provides some clarity and an opportunity to address it at that point. Just a suggestion, Mr. Chairman.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I seconded this motion because the Groundfish Committee did, in fact, take this up and move to, with language, essentially what Jim Odlin has. I very much think that we need to allow sectors in multiple plans, but I also think that, as Dave Gaethel said, that this is not the time to do it. I think we need to get our feet wet with sectors and then make this change at a later time. I think it's premature right now to do it. As much as I'd like to see it done, I do think it's premature. So I don't really support this, but I thought that since the Groundfish Committee had already approved it and to move it forward, that we should just put it on the table and have just the discussion we've had. But reluctantly, I hate to do this, but reluctantly, I'm not going to support this motion.
Anything further from the council? Sally?
Yeah, I'm going to support this motion. I think that even though the resources are limited at the with council staff, that we need to, if the council wants to do this, give the signal that this kind of tool can be used in a variety of contexts. And even if we're not able to right now in the next couple of months figure out how that could work, either in the context of groundfish and monkfish or in the context of dealing with bycatch in the scallop fishery or bycatch in the herring fishery, for example, that we shouldn't set this aside knowing that this is there's a potential, this is one way to solve problems that we have in fisheries that, or with vessels that are active in different fisheries, either in a directed fashion or as a result of bycatch. So I'm going to support this with the understanding that maybe the resources aren't there right now to be able to answer these questions, but they're important enough, and the potential for getting to some solutions to problems that we keep wrestling with, both in the context of bycatch and other issues with closely related fisheries like groundfish and monkfish, that I don't want to let it go. Therefore, I'm going to support it.
Okay, I have Jim Odlin, Dave Pierce, Jim Salisbury.
Well, one of the reasons I proposed this motion and support it is that I'd like to try to be in a position that I'm forward-looking. And right now, I don't think there are any other FMPs that allow sectors. We'd first need monkfish to allow it. And you're just trying to look forward. And as far as trying to build a buggy, I'd like to try to build a Rolls Royce. Maybe I'll end up with a buggy, but if I try to build a buggy, I'll end up with a buggy. So
I think that's analogy is something I'd shoot for the Rolls Royce every time.
Dr. Pierce, then Jim Salisbury.
Well, I'm not going to make another analogy. I thought David was good enough. However, if this was to pass, that is, if we now decide to allow more than one sector in different FMPs in the same year, then staff better immediately be dedicated to addressing the disadvantages or supporting the reconstituted sector committee to immediately address the disadvantages that are described so well in this thoughtful piece put together by Phil Herring and company. And these are huge disadvantages. I think we're ignoring them, and we can't. They're huge, especially the ones that relate to monkfish. So I have to oppose the motion to amend.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a good idea to strike this language from the current policy because, first of all, what we're doing is we're restricting any kind of innovation or any kind of thought of what a sector can do before they even propose to do it. We're thinking of all of these hypothetical reasons how you could have conflict, and they're true. They're possible ways you could have conflict. But ultimately, you look at the sector plan that comes forward and describes what they want to do, and you have the opportunity at that point to not approve it or to not let it go forward. Let the sectors themselves, the whole purpose of this is to let the industry try to figure out how they could do something that benefits them without raising undue cause or problems. What this does is it says there could be a problem there, so we're not going to let anybody think about that when there may be several ways to do it that there is no problem. It may be even beneficial, but this prevents you from thinking that. We still have the option to disapprove the sector itself, the proposal that comes forward. So I think that it's important for us not to try to answer every potential problem with a negative, and then what we end up with is such an onerous regime that nobody comes forward and tries a sector. That's already what's happening now. I mean, so many restrictions are coming forward because of our concern of how it could get away from us or how somebody might think of something that is too difficult to handle, so we prevent them from even thinking about it. So I would urge us to, in a policy area, leave it a little more flexible, a little more open, let the ideas come forward, and if at the time when they come forward, all of these problems, potential problems, are well known, we can address them as they come up react to them at the time when they're really real problems, not when they're possible problems. Thank you.
Anyone else in the council? Go to the audience. Maggie, then Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. I urge you to support the amendment as well as the original motion. I think I may have a potential solution to the original, another suggestion for the original motion that may speed things up. But first of all, let me explain why I think it's essential for vessels to be in more than one sector. The sustainable harvest sector has one vessel that qualifies for general category scallop ITQ, just one. So he then can never be, we don't have enough, you have to have more than one person to be in a sector, right? You have a minimum number, so he can't be his own sector. He has to go to another sector in order to, if he wants to be in a sector. Same thing, we have another boat, one boat that has herring history. So if he wants to be in a herring sector, he has to go to another sector. So and now we have this deadline that people have to turn in their roster by March 1st. So what are those guys supposed to do? What choice are they supposed to make? To be in this sector now and lock themselves into it forever, or to possibly have the possibility of going into the herring sector when there is a herring sector available for them to be in? As far as this issues paper, I really think that some of the disadvantages are somewhat exaggerated. But I think the advantages are very important. And so my suggestion for the first part of the motion, the original motion, would be to take a couple of people from your different advisory panels and put them together and have them address these disadvantages and give you some recommendations on how you might address those. I don't think that's as costly as running a sector committee meeting if you have a meeting of your advisory panel. So that would be one potential way that you could address, come up with some recommendations on how you might make this work, make people feel more comfortable about allowing this to happen. So, again, the policy, I think, needs to be, as Jim Salisbury said, it's a policy. It's something you're saying, you know, we would like this to happen. This is a good thing. And as long as you can work out the potential disadvantages in your operations plan, then we'll allow that to happen. Thank you.
To that point, Paul?
I just wanted to be clear in my own mind. Vessel A has two permits, a monkfish and a groundfish permit. He can join, if you pass this, he can join two sectors. He can join the monkfish sector if they have one and a groundfish sector because he has limited access permits in each of those plants. He also wants to join a scallop sector. He can't because he doesn't have a scallop permit. So the idea of having a herring boat, just fishing herring but wanting to join the groundfish or another sector, he can, as long as he has a limited access permit in that sector, by this motion. I just want to be clear. You have to have a limited access permit in the sector that you're going to belong to, but you can belong, by this motion, to more than one sector.
Okay. Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Kalin, representing Ocean Spray Partnership. I just handed my sheet in, so I'm legal, I think, now. Filled it out just a few minutes ago. But why I wanted to speak in support of this motion, I think that Jim Salisbury and Jimmy Odlin are right. We need to be creative and flexible. And I'm thinking about the herring amendment that's coming up and the fact that we can deal with herring sectors there. And I can imagine, although I'm not personally convinced that sectors make sense in herring, you might want to be in a herring sector and a mackerel sector, for example, under another, obviously another council's jurisdiction. So if this doesn't pass and we can't be this flexible going forward, we couldn't, for example, in the herring amendment, come to the council and ask for participation in the mackerel sector. So I just don't see why we need to be so restrictive, and I like the flexibility that this amendment reflects, and so that's why I came to the mic to support it. Thank you.
Is Jeff, anyone else in the audience? Is it Harriet?
I have a question. A few weeks ago, I went over to Rhode Island. I think it was Rhode Island Sea Grant, and I guess some other people put up the money, and they had a seminar on sectors. And there was a man there from Washington. I've got his card, but I don't remember exactly what his position was. I think his name was Holliday. And Mr. Holliday, and he said that they were working on the advisement language, the guidelines for sectors, and that the language would not be completed till late summer or early fall because they did have a help problem. They couldn't get, you know, they didn't have enough people resources to do it quicker. The end of the summer or early fall. So I got a question. What this language he's working on, what's that about? If everybody here is moving forward on something without guidance, is this man just working in vain down in Washington, or could you explain to me what's really going on here?
I think I wasn't at the meeting in Rhode Island, but I think Dr. Mark Holliday is the man you're referring to. I think he's working on guidance for LAPPs.
No, he said sectors. He spoke.
Okay. Okay, maybe sectors as they apply to LAPPs. But again, I wasn't at the meeting. I'm not sure what he's working on.
Well, there's people. Sally was at the meeting. There's people in the room here that were at the meeting. There's several people that were at the meeting. Mr. Prowell was at the meeting. He spoke.
Okay.
I'm confused. And to me, I've heard people speak before here today, a few fishermen. It seems like things aren't transparent and there's a lot of confusion. And this is supposed to be when the public has their chance to have input. I'm finding it more and more confusing. I started here and coming in 86. It's getting more confusing. And I just do not understand, truthfully, what taxpayers' money is being put to down in Washington. If you're going ahead, if you're going to do something, be it sectors, be it whatever you're talking about, I'm just asking about this. How would you know how to proceed when there's going to be guidance language and you don't know what that's going to be? So how would you know what can go in, what can't go in? You say it goes in a sector, you mean the boat goes in? You mean they throw their allocation in? What goes in? All these things aren't clear here today. And that's what I just want to say. I'm sitting in the audience, it's not clear, and I have these questions when I sat over there 2 days and listened to the presentations. So it is confusing and it seems futile.
Do you have a copy of our sector policy, the document that we're debating right now?
Yeah, but what's that got to do with it if more information is going to come from Washington? Everything I hear here is we have to do this because we got the word from Washington. We have to do that by a certain time frame because we got the word from Washington. But all of a sudden, this guidance is going to make no difference. It seems to me like a double standard. That's all I'm saying. Maybe I'm too dumb. I'm missing something here. But I don't know how you can go forward when I would think you would be under the policy of Washington.
Well,
not you personally, but I mean this body.
No, I understand that. We have two existing sectors right now.
I understand that under the old rules.
Right. Well, we did write a letter to I can't remember who it was now. Somebody, maybe it was Pat, who wrote a letter and it said, do these sectors qualify as LAPPs? And the guidance we got back at that point was, no, they don't. Now, the guidance can change. The guidance, National Standard 1 guidelines we're waiting for on these annual catch limits.
I understand.
Doesn't mean that the council can just wait until we get those guidelines to start the plan because, as you know and everyone else knows, the law says we have to amend our plans for stocks, for fisheries where stocks are being overfished by 2010. So we have to proceed along that line.
I understand, but if what you're doing is not going to answer that, what they want, why would you go on to something that might not answer what has to happen? I'm just saying it. I don't understand it, really. I mean, you're proceeding with this and that. You're saying, even when you say, well, can you go in two sectors? Just say that. They can go in this and go in that. Do you mean their allocation goes in, their boat goes in? What are you really talking about? All these words, they're just words. What do they mean?
Well, right now, if you go back and look at the sector policy, but to that question about what goes into a sector, it's a permit. It's a limited access active permit that signs into a sector for a period of 1 year, signs a contract and commits itself to that contract and operating plan or harvest plan. And there's a schedule of penalties. So I'll share with you the ones that we've developed for the hook sector or the fixed gear sector.
Well, I appreciate it, but people spoke from the hook gear sector and from the gillnet sector over there in Rhode Island.
Now, what's being discussed right now is can that vessel that's in a groundfish, this is an example, in a groundfish sector,
right,
which also may have limited access monkfish permit,
right,
can that same vessel join a sector that's formed under the monkfish plan? That's what's being discussed right now.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
But I'm just wondering, as you proceed forward, and there's supposed to be guidance coming, are you building a house and you don't know what the foundation is? That's sort of the bottom line of what I'm asking. And you're saying, well, we got a deadline in 2010 or whatever, and we've got to get these things done. Well, maybe you had other things you could have done today, and you're on something that might not be fruitful in the end if they say in Washington something else. That's all I'm trying to say. I'm sitting in the audience, and that's what I'm trying to say. I hear people who have been out to the hearings for Amendment 11. Obviously, it wasn't transparent. They really don't understand. I mean, they all speak English. And if there's, when these things happen, the language at these hearings when they go out should be understandable to people. That should be the focus. You're here to educate and bring the message. This is the public forum, the only time people are getting involved. It should be understandable. They should be able to know what's going to happen so they can proceed. And what I'm saying is there seems to be a lot of confusion, gray area, and lack of transparency. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Ron Smolowitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Kuna Mesit Farm. I have a question more than anything else. I've been following this sector thing. Has there been an analysis at all? I have no opinion at this point in time about sectors, but I'm trying to get my understand it better because we don't have consensus on it, at least in the scallop industry. Has there been an analysis of how many sectors may ultimately occur vis-a-vis a single species sector versus a multi-FMP sector? And the reason I bring that up is if, in fact, a sector is successful in accomplishing a goal such as getting more bycatch, how many sectors ultimately would occur? I mean, if overnight there was one sector and it was able to fish more because it had bycatch that came in with a groundfish vessel, then the entire fleet would start applying for sectors. And if you game it out, I would imagine that it would be better to be in a smaller sector than a larger sector. So I'm just wondering, has there been an analysis to look at the ultimate number? And my concern is that if the council ends up having to review hundreds of sectors, then the real work of managing the fish stocks starts falling back, just like we heard this morning, where we have key biological issues and management issues that be addressed, but the allocation issues start becoming dominant. How many sectors are we looking at? Has that been gamed out in what this motion might do as far as going from a single FMP to multiple FMP?
I'm not aware of any analysis that tries to tackle that question.
Well, then my two cents, I think you need to game these things out before you start making policy decisions because you have no idea where you're going. I mean, and it could be pretty bad as far as where the resources of the council ends up, totally involved with allocation among little sectors of the fleet as opposed to the broader questions of why aren't codfish coming back.
Anyone else? Okay, back to the council. Dave Gaith.
I'm going to try one last time. I want to be for this motion, but I just can't. I really want to be for it. I'm looking. I wrote down the federal fisheries that I participate in now that could be in sectors. Skates, dogfish, monkfish, herring, groundfish, and whiting. Is there anybody here that really believes you could track what I do across six different sectors with six sector managers when we haven't got one set of sectors up and actually running yet? We don't have one fishery that's primarily involved in sectors. And yet we're talking about putting people in multiple sectors across multiple fisheries with no game plan to do it. And I really think we ought to just sit down and be practical and let's get one going. Let's get groundfish done. I think maybe half the fleet, maybe more, might join the groundfish sectors. Then we've already just decided we're going to do general category scallops at the same time. So let's you know, we'll be dealing with that as well. I'm sorry. I just don't think this is practical. I want to be for it, but I just can't.
Anything further? You ready for the question on the motion to amend? All those in favor, raise your hand. Nine opposed. Six. Motion to amend carries 9-6. So now we're on the main motion as amended. I'm sorry, I'm having a sidebar. It seems to me that...
We already did the definition. We voted that one already. We changed the definition. This is the second.
That was a motion to amend made by Jim Odlin, seconded by Dave Preble. When you combine it with the first part, right, the main motion, it seems to me they're kind of two different things. So it should have been, I guess, a separate motion.
Or a motion should have been substitute. A substitute motion.
Substitute so, motion.
I don't know what the next step is now. To tell me, Mr. Chairman, what to do.
Yeah, I'm going to turn to the parliamentarian here.
Unless there's no objection, that should be a substitute. It's a substitute.
It was this motion a substitute. Was that people's understanding? I mean, the first half says reconstitute the sector, ad hoc sector committee. And then this amendment added some language, it struck some language in the policy that we currently have. Jim Salisbury?
Well, I think there are two different actions that you'd be taking. And by passing the amendment, you've added a second action to the overall thing. So it's not precisely a motion to substitute. It's basically an amending the motion to cause it to do two different things, which is okay if that's how you want to do it. So, I mean, as amended, now you still have to vote on it as amended because the first part hasn't been modified yet.
Right, in my mind, I wanted to be clear on what it was we were going to vote on. Dave Preble?
Yeah, thank you. It was my understanding that we were attempting to do both things because we have the white paper that really we haven't had a chance to consider. And so it was my understanding that Jim Odlin was exactly correct, that he wanted to amend it, not substitute. And I don't really see a problem with putting the two together.
Okay. Two different actions in one motion now. Okay. I just needed to get that clear in my mind. I apologize. Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, I think it's consistent. If this motion passes, then I would suspect that the executive committee, you specifically, Mr. Chairman, will have to move quickly to, as I said before, get the sector committee back in business and provide necessary staff support to follow up ASAP on those particular disadvantages described by Phil and company. At least that's the way I would anticipate things moving. Otherwise, months will go by, and we'll have a policy with the implications of that policy not being thoroughly understood because we have this issues paper out there that shows us how bleak and dark things could be.
Any further discussion? Okay. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Ten. Opposed? Four opposed. The motion, as amended, carries 10-4. And one abstention. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I assume you're going to go on to the other issues that relate to the different policies. If you are, I would like some guidance from the chair because I've lost track. Paul indicated that there were some policies offered up by the executive committee that pertain to tomorrow's business. I don't know which ones pertain to today's business, and that if you could clarify that would be helpful.
I would recommend at this point that you lump in the AP and the enforcement and the new gear and just say recommend they be approved, the policies. But tomorrow we're going to discuss two specific gear proposals, the Eliminator Trawl and the Cape Cod Norbait issue as different gears for the U.S.-Canada area. And the staff had reviewed those prior to this policy. And we'll discuss it on the groundfish.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we leave the sector policy section, there was another motion that was passed by the groundfish committee concerning this. And so I'm on behalf of the groundfish committee, I want to move to recommend that the council strike the following sentence. Strike the following sentence from the sector policy document. Each sector is responsible for ensuring their eligibility criteria are implemented in a fair and uniform manner. I do not have the, I couldn't find the committee motions document for this to give the exact rationale, so I would ask any of the committee members if they do that. I think the main discussion was that this was getting too detailed into the operations policy or EA the operations plan of the individual sectors, and that they should be able to set their, you know, it's a contract between them and the individuals joining the sector, and they should be able to do it in whatever fashion they wanted to.
Jim Alden.
Yeah, I think Rip's right that we don't need to be police, you know, literally police on the beat. In this case, it should be, you know, two people sign into a contract, they're both agreeing, and they must assume that it was fair and equitable, or they wouldn't agree to the contract. So it shouldn't be up to us to get into each contract and decide that. So I think that was the reason we had that debate and came up with this motion.
Dana Rice, then John Nelson.
I'm getting a little more confused by the second, Mr. Chairman. I hear what everybody's saying, and if I sign a contract with Jimmy out on the street and Jimmy gets the best of me, that's a good deal. But I think this body is a little bit different than that's a little bit different than this body. I think maybe eliminating this sentence is one thing, but I don't think we ought to go on record as saying anything that's done that isn't equitable, that takes more advantage of one person than the other, isn't what we should be doing sitting around this table. Maybe I'm wrong, but one-on-one in the business is one thing, but I think anything that we do here should definitely be as equitable and fair as we can make it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
John Nelson.
Amen. I mean, what's the problem? If somebody wants to enter their contract, our criteria is, hey, it's supposed to be fair and equitable, and they both sign off on it, well, so aren't they saying that to themselves and to us, well, we consider it fair and equitable? I just don't see what Jim is getting at as far as that we shouldn't provide some criteria. That's what the policy does. You provide criteria so people know what they're trying to get into. And if we get a bunch of complaints about from a sector that this was not fair at all, what are you going to do? You don't have a policy that says, oh, it doesn't matter because it doesn't say it had to be fair. I mean, that will look like dopes. And I really think in this case you ought to leave a criteria as general as this in there.
I have David Pierce.
I'm sure that all the sector managers will be very fair and equitable, and they'll work to do what's best for the fishing industry in general. Sure. Maybe. What we're going to create are a number of czars who will be working with committees of sorts, membership, I don't know with whom. There are a lot of sectors to be formed, a lot of unknowns regarding who's in charge, how the managers will operate, how they'll do business, and I would like to just maintain this policy as is, just so that they realize that we would like them to, how should I put this, fair and uniform is obviously difficult to explain, but still it's to not use a heavy boot on the common pool vessels, for example, that might want to get into a particular sector and can't for whatever reason. So we're just being watchful, recognizing that down the road we may actually be obliged to put in place some specific criteria relative to sectors that would prevent unfair practices, whatever they may be. It'll all play out as time goes on, I'm sure. I'm still concerned, however, at this point in time, and so are common pool members, by the way, that they may not have access to sectors, that there may be some heavy-handed practices. There may be some inequities. Let's face it. It's new. It's a new world into which we are moving, and there'll be a lot of fascinating dynamics between the leaders of these different sectors. Fascinating dynamics that we may never even be privy to, but we may hear it rumored. So I prefer to keep it as is, just as a matter of principle that. These sectors should be above board and should work with all those who would like to get into a sector with some in an above board manner.
Thanks, Dave. Everybody's waking up. Dave Preble, then I have Mr. Simpson.
And, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. With this discussion is going far afield from what the original intent of this was. The word equitable isn't in there at all. We weren't talking about equitability in this particular discussion. What we were talking about was fairness and fair and uniform in the social sense, and it was an attempt to register that we wanted this to be done in a socially without discrimination against any particular ethnic or social groups. That was what that discussion was about. Then once we had put that in, then we decided that was something that was beyond our business, that we shouldn't be doing that anyway, and that's why we decided to eliminate it. That's all it related to. It wasn't about equitability. It was about fair and uniform. Is that correct, Rip? Yep, that's what it was. And that was when we decided that was something that was that we weren't the social police. We had two things that were at odds here, and one of them was the people's right to free association, balanced against the social need for harmonious balance, in the ethnic sense. That's what it was all about, and we decided to just step back away from it. That's why this was passed by the committee.
Rip, did you want to fill in more on what – did Dave capture the discussion at the committee, Will?
Yes. There was also the issue that looking at the makeup of individual sectors, you're talking about uniform. Well, they might want to have a 70-foot boat and a 40-foot boat. Or they would go and make choices of what they thought would best support and build the sector that they were trying to do. So, I mean, we were essentially trying to give people the flexibility of setting up their own contracts with the individual members. Just a further point, so I don't speak again. I made the motion as the chair of the Ground Fish Committee, in listening to people and continuing to think about it. Quite frankly, I'm not sure it's worth spending a whole lot more time on it all. Let's just vote it either up or down and move on is the way I feel.
I had a few more hands I'm going to grab, but I'm starting to feel that way too. Dave Simpson.
Yeah, this one really has me shaking my head. What really is intended here, I get the... at some level, it's just a private, business enterprise, and you do have to worry about taking on the liability of others. But more fundamentally, it's still a public resource. So I wonder, behind all of this, what federal laws still apply in terms of protections based on, as you said, you know, race, sex, national origin, all of those things. I mean, can you just decide you're going to have the sector of the Aryan nation? I mean, I hate to be comical about it, but is that permissible? Or are there underlying – with the state of Connecticut, if you have a contract, do anything with the state, you have to follow certain – agree to follow certain laws in your hiring and practices and so forth. Is there something underlying this that provides those protections?
Well, any existing laws, state, federal, local, whatever they are, still apply to whatever arrangement you're getting into. The Madison Act doesn't exempt you from any of those. For the most part, doesn't exempt you. I mean, there are some other laws, for example, that create exemptions for fishing co-ops and so forth in terms of antitrust law. But any law that would apply still applies, whether the council says you have to comply with that law or not. The Madison Act does say that fishery management plans should be consistent with all applicable law, but that doesn't mean you have to legislate that affirmatively. Those laws still apply. I mean, limited access rules that you all have been dealing with for years don't say that it has to be non-discriminatory in terms of race, for example. But that doesn't mean that those FMPs that established those limited access programs were somehow legally deficient, or that existing laws don't apply, whether stated or not, in those FMPs.
Dave.
Yeah, just to follow up, I mean, that helps a lot, but this is one step removed where we're saying, it's up to you who you want to include in your club, and it just worries me a little bit.
Phil Herring.
Thank you. As staff member on this, and John Nelson can affirm or refute what I say, but my recollection is that the reason this is in there is the committee wrestled with this question and said, okay, if a vessel meets the eligibility criteria that's in the sector plan, can the sector deny him or her membership? And I think this answer was no. Now, that may be something that the council wants to reconsider, just when sectors develop their eligibility criteria, if there is a group of people that want to stay together and not include anyone else, that they define their eligibility criteria by location and several other factors that would, in and of itself, in a non-discriminatory way, limit the membership capability. But the committee was saying if a vessel meets the eligibility criteria of a sector, that they can't arbitrarily deny membership. Whether that's what you want or not is up to you. But that's my understanding of the root of that policy.
I could tell you having gone through now 5 years of sector contracts and memberships with the hook sector, that there are times that you're worried that somebody's going to want to join your sector, that you have no faith that individual is going to perform to the standards of the contract. And by signing the contract, you're responsible for the activities of that individual. So it's a balancing act. How can we disqualify someone or not allow entry into the sector? Because we all know that guy's doing X, Y, and Z. So then I think that's the tussle here. That's the debate that we're engaged in. I'll take a few more comments, and then I'm going to go to the audience briefly. John Nelson.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I do agree with you. I think, though, that we are going about this totally wrong. I don't think that the council did not charge the Groundfish Committee to critique the policy that was adopted by the council on sectors. I think if the Ground Fish Committee had some issue that they said, we ought to reconsider this, they should bring it back to the council and have it remanded back to the committee that it was developed in so that proper discussions could take place. But here we are on the fly trying to modify a policy again. And I think that's the wrong procedure.
Dave Gates.
Yeah.
actually read what the language says. It says each sector is responsible for ensuring that eligibility criteria are implemented in a fair and uniform manner. Eligibility criteria. That means, from where I sit, you can't have two people apply to your sector and charge one guy $10,000 to join and one guy a dollar. Because you don't like that guy, and if you're going to take him, you'll take him for 10 grand. But you'll only take you like this guy, and you're only going to take him for one. Now, it's bad enough that they're self-selected, in my opinion. But the fact that we're going to remove this clause and say, now it's okay to charge that guy 10 grand, because you'll like him if he pays 10 grand. But you're only going to charge that guy a buck. That's inexcusable. It's disgraceful. We shouldn't even be sitting here having that discussion. That's very different from what John mentioned about we don't want to take you because we think you're a lawbreaker. As long as you don't take any lawbreakers and you're very explicit right up front and saying we aren't taking you because we don't think you'll abide by the contract, that's very different. This here is saying we reserve the right to charge differential amounts of money to enter our sector because we're using that as a form of discrimination. And I don't see how that's any different from saying, you know, your skin color is different than mine or whatever. That's discrimination no matter how you slice it. And if we remove this clause, then we're encouraging that to happen. And I don't think we should even be thinking about going there. We should keep this clause absolutely and make it very plain to people that at the very least, if you let people in, you've got to have some kind of eligibility criteria that's consistent. And it's consistent to all people, and that there is no discrimination in any way, shape, or form, whether it's by the color of their skin, their sex, or by how much money they're willing to pay. So I urge you to vote this down.
Jim Odlin, then I'm going to the audience.
Yeah, I'll take one more shot at this. I don't think it's anybody wants to discriminate against anybody. The issue is, and this came out in the development of sectors as the lawyers from all over the country came to people involved in sectors and preached to them the amount of liability that they're taking on, which John mentioned, from the other members, joint and several liability from all the other members of the sector that's involved. Now, no one knows the fishing industry better than the fishermen. And whether somebody has a lot of violations or not, doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean they haven't been breaking the law or they're not going to break the law. It just means they haven't been caught. So if you take away the ability of a sector to self-determine and allow people in under different criteria, then you are passing a big liability on to people with no mechanism for them to limit that liability in places they know best. We don't know. They know. And, you know, somebody could be right on the edge, ready to go bankrupt, and you know they're breaking the law every day, and you just don't want them in your sector. You can't afford the liability. And I think that they could come to you and say, they didn't use me uniformly. They didn't use me fairly. And just because I'm a bad actor, that doesn't mean you can't you got to let them in your sector. That's the reason that the Groundfish Committee wrestled with this and came back with just saying, take this sentence out. As Gene said, all of the laws apply except for who can get in this sector. You need to let the sector people do that.
Okay, Jim. I'm going to go to the audience. Maggie?
Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. I think my recollection of the discussion of this in the Groundfish Committee was based on what Jim Odlin just said. This language implied that you had to take anybody who applied to be in your sector. Now, a sector is a corporation that's incorporated legally under the laws of a specific state. That means that they must have bylaws that describe how they allow people to be members. That is where the eligibility criteria for the sector comes in. It's spelled out in the bylaws. So there is no reason for the council to weigh in on that at all. And people, as has been said, need to be able to say no. The sectors have to be self-selecting. The liability is just too great otherwise. So there was a concern that this language implied that they were not self-selecting, that you had to take anybody who applied, and that is, and if that's the case, you can put this whole thing to bed right now, because no one is going to be in a sector where they have to take people that they don't want to and risk losing everything that they've worked for.
Mary Beth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mary Beth Tooley, Small Pelagic Groups and the O'Hara Corporation. And I would just wanted to support this motion to strike this language. I think people have identified some of the major reasons why you would not want to have this in there. Joint and several liability is the most important. I think it's pretty basic. You look around the room, you say, you know, I really trust you, and I really trust you, and I don't think I trust you. So, you know, you don't want to sign a contract with that person. I mean, I just participated in the past year in negotiating a contract similar to the sector-type contracts that we're discussing here, and it was a consensus process. It took a whole year to do it. It was not about, you know, maybe I don't trust you so much, so I'm going to charge you $50, but I really like you better, so I'm going to charge you $1. It was a process of a group of people, very diverse, operating at a fishery, sitting down and spending time going through the detail of how they were going to operate. Consensus at the end was the only way you were going to get there. There was benefits to people to bring everybody to the table as much as possible, and it worked. And that's how this process goes. So it needs to be self-selecting. People need to trust the people that they're working with, and this language is not needed. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, back to the council. Tom Hill.
Hey, quickly, Mr. Chairman. I find it somewhat ironic listening to the discussion that the purpose of the sectors was to give the fleet some of their flexibility back economically and in terms of the way they prosecuted the fishery so that they could be a little more efficient in their application of opportunity. And here we are debating the ability of them to have the choice of free association. I mean, you really think we're smart enough to figure out what's good for everybody? I mean, good God.
Anything further? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 12 opposed. 5 opposed. And motion carries 12 to 5. Anything further? Paul Howard.
Just before we get on to any other business, if the council maybe by consensus approves the language for advisors, enforcement, and gear, new gear review.
Jim Salisbury, was that your hand up?
Just a question. When you say approves the language, you mean approves as in the memorandum that no action on the advisory panel has?
Each of the three policies are in there. So you approve the three policies as is.
Is there an objection to that? Okay. Jim Maudlin, another issue?
Yes, I'm going to offer a motion, but first I want to give a little bit of a description, and it will be under the Scientific and Statistical Committee selection. And I feel that after hearing everything on new Magnuson authorization and how important the Scientific and Statistical Committee is going to be to this body, that the decision should be made by the full council on who sits on the SSC. So I'm going to offer a motion that the full council will appoint the SSC members. And that's the motion, and I have one more comment. And
is there a second? Seconded by Jim Salisbury. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, the second comment is, and I asked earlier, and I thought I was right, and we've never approved the SOPs as a package back in 2 or 3 meetings ago. We put it off. There's never been a motion to, I checked, and there's never been a motion to accept the SOPs as a package, so
that doesn't really matter to this motion. I still want to make the change, but I just thought we ought to deal with that at the end of the day.
Discussion? Dave Preble?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding that that kind of discussion would have to be held in executive session. Is that correct?
The discussion of the SSC members, mm-hmm. membership?
Yes.
We would probably close the meeting, yeah. Anything further from the council? Jim Salisbury.
Just to that point, I think the motion is calling for the selection process to run much the same as it does now, or advertisements, getting a list of nominees, but basically it's just saying that rather than the executive committee making the appointment, that the council will make the appointment, and that I wonder if is there a need to get into the level of detail that would require an executive session? In that, I mean, you have a slate and people saying who they are and what they are, and you say yes or no. I mean, it doesn't seem as though that rises to the level of an executive session, but it's more of a question. Thank you.
I don't think it's a problem. When we were going to approve the people on the committee, we just closed the meeting for an hour, pick who we are going to pick, and then open up the meeting again and announce who we picked. But usually there's statements said about why I prefer this one over the other one, and it's best in executive session. So we'll close the meeting when we do that. My question, while I have the microphone, Mr. Chairman, is this is for future appointments. We just went out with letters and approved folks for a three-year period. So I would imagine that in the future, or if anyone says I want to quit for any reason and we need a new person, we'd adhere to this new policy. But since we just gave out letters for 3 years, I wouldn't want to change that.
Jim?
Just to be clear, that's the intent of the motion, that future appointments.
Okay, any further discussion? I've got Sally McGee, Dave Gaethel, Pat Kirkel.
For a point of clarification, I assume that, I don't know, maybe incorrectly, that there's an objection with the process that resulted in the list that we have in front of us, document 2A under tab 1, but maybe that's not the case. So I'm just wondering, aside from the brief justification that was offered, that it's, you know, the SSC is going to play a larger role, which we knew. I mean, we knew that over a year ago when Magnuson was reauthorized. Why the change now?
Dave Gaethel, then Pat Kirkel, then Dr. Pierce.
Okay, I'm going to oppose the motion. I think that, quite frankly, this gets us involved in a level of detail that the general counsel doesn't need to do. It just makes this more drawn out than it already is. Quite frankly, my feeling is that if we don't trust our executive committee to make these kind of decisions, then we should put different people on the executive committee, not have to drag it before the full council, close the meeting, and throw everybody out the door for an hour or two while, you know, we hash it around. So I just think it's an unnecessary step. Again, I would say if you have that level of distrust in the executive committee, then you should replace the members on it. Thank you.
Pat Kirkel.
Well, I agree with David. The executive committee appoints the advisors. I don't see why this is different necessarily, and I think the process works the way it is.
Dr. Pierce?
I agree with David. In order for me to determine whether or not I'm satisfied with what the executive committee did and whether or not I want to try to bounce some executive committee members off the executive committee down the road because I'm dissatisfied with them, and I'm not, but if I was, I'd like to know some more information about these individuals. I know many of the individuals who have been appointed, but there are many I don't know from a hole in the wall. Therefore, is there any information on the website, any documents made available that would describe who they are, what their backgrounds are, so I will feel, for example, more confident that indeed you made very wise choices. I'm sure you did, but still, if you covered this issue this morning before I arrived, I apologize for raising the issue, but I'd love to know who they are. At least six of these individuals I don't know, so I just want to give them a ring and say hello.
Well, I've got a contact sheet here for you if you want.
But again, a biography. So, why did you pick these individuals? I think if we knew why you picked them, qualifications, obviously, there'd be less concern, and the motion may not have been made. Again, I trust your judgment, but I just want to know who they are. So what's the next step in this process regarding my request, Mr. Chairman, for information regarding who they are?
You want the CVs of everybody that's known?
Well, no. The world wants to know. Right, the fishing industry wants to know. States want to know who are these individuals. I'm assuming that a very short description of their qualifications, who they are, where they're from, where they live, whatever, that would be made available on the website, so we would just know who these extremely important people are, because we have to listen to their advice. I want to know them.
Okay.
So.
You want a couple of bullets under each person's name on the website?
Just something to help us understand who they are, right?
Okay.
Thank you.
Frank Plump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to oppose the motion only because it gets very difficult in a large group to start discussing people. But I think what might be somewhat of a compromise here, if people are amenable to it, maybe before the executive committee makes a decision, if the whole council had the package of the applications, they could look them over. If they had objections to anybody or favored anybody, they could forward those to the executive committee rather than taking it out, because going around a group of 18 people here and then going through a list of applications of, you know, up to, you know, 25 applications, it's not closing the meeting for an hour. It's a very long, drawn-out process. So I think that may be, well, this goes, I don't know how the motion is going to go yet, but that would be my recommendation on it.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Frank's getting somewhat to the point. I think that given the level of input that the Statistical Committee is required to give us and we are required to take, I think it's important that the full council knows who they are, knows about them, has some confidence in the fact that they are, in fact, the people who should be giving us this advice. And it all comes from this elevation of the requirements for the Statistical Committee. In response to Sally's question, I, for one, am not satisfied with getting a report that these are the people that were appointed to the Statistical Committee. I didn't know who they were, who was even considered. So while I can't think of anybody specifically that I say, well, that's a bad choice, I don't even know what the other choices were. And I think that's an error. I think we should know for our sake. We need to know who it is that we have placed this much confidence in to give us some of this required advice. I also think that while I have great respect for the individual members of the executive committee, I think that the executive committee is made up, and as the existing one shows, it's not necessarily representative of the broad breadth of the council. For example, this time there are no state directors on the executive committee. Regionally, it's very, I don't want to use a word that sounds bad, but it's centered in one area of the region. There are many things that when we choose an executive committee, we're not choosing it in order to pick scientific and statistical committee members. So that's not a matter of importance, but at some point it may be. So I think it's important for the council as a whole to at least vet these people before there is a choice that is made for us. Thank you.
Jim Alden.
Yeah, I still support my motion, and I believe other councils, the full council picks the SSC. I think the Mid-Atlantic does, and I don't know. I think the South Atlantic may also, but I'm not sure of that. So I don't think it can be that burdensome if other councils are doing it, and I think it would it'd be very helpful to me if we had the input and actually picked them.
Jimmy Rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just happened to be that I didn't mention it during the report this morning, but one of the action items from the council, and we did it as a full council, we had to actually modify and change the SOPs because that stated up to 12 SSC members, and we expanded it to 20. Certainly didn't have 8 more people available. We have less than 12, but it took about 12 minutes. You know, there was, of course, we had 8 seats to fill, and we only had like 5 names, so, you know, that might have helped us a little bit, but if there would have been some of the names on our list that's on yours, now it would have took a lot longer than 12 minutes. But we in fact did it in a public forum and did it reasonably quickly, and that's the way we've always dealt with issues like that. I don't ever recall doing it any different, Mr. Chairman. So.
Anyone else? Dana Rice.
Well, quickly, Mr. Chairman, it would seem to me that if the full council wanted to participate in this process, and I don't see any problem with them doing it. I would think that the council chairman probably could facilitate that if everybody came to the table aware of the portfolio for the people that are presented there, and if there's some choices there. I think it would be up to your discretion not to let me campaign for my person. Probably just a few written ballots ought to take care of that situation in an hour, I would think. I mean, it ought to be a way to expedite that rather than have me expound on how I think that this person is much better for this job than the other one. There ought to be a way to cut that debate off and get a vote out there somehow or other in a reasonable time frame. I have that kind of confidence in you, John, and I think the rest of us do, too.
Anything further? Okay, you ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 3 in favor. Opposed? 12 opposed. Motion fails. Anything else under this agenda item? Jim Arlen.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up, and it could be memory, but I think we ought to have a motion to accept the whole document as we've amended today, just for clarity.
Yeah, you're right. We held over the enforcement and the AP policies, and we just dealt with those today. So I think you're right, Jim. We should have a motion to approve the whole SOPS package. Somebody wants to make that. Is that you, Jim Alden? You make that motion?
So moved.
Seconded. Dave Preble, Jim Salisbury, you had a comment?
I don't know whether, yeah, I think probably before that motion, I think what I was wanting to do is go back to what Frank had said, that Frank made a suggestion that as an alternative to this motion, and I would like to see at least that the council be apprised of who the nominees are for the Scientific and Statistical Committee. I think that's an important thing to do. So I there's a motion on the floor now and seconded, so how do you want to deal with that? I mean, you can vote it through and then we can change it.
Yeah. I can withdraw the motion.
All right. Jim?
Well, I would move what Frank said. How's that? I think move that the council be made aware of the nominees for the scientific and statistical committees, and that we provide a recommendation to the executive committee. And I envision it much like what's done with the advisors now, the advisory panels. We make a recommendation. You finally appoint them. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, and it was seconded by Rodney Avila. Discussion? Okay, I think we've beaten this thing left, right, up, down, everything else. Ready for the question? All those in favor? Unanimous. Okay, thanks, Jim. Jim, you want to make that motion again?
I'd like to move that the SOPs, as amended as of today, be accepted.
Seconded by Dave Preble. Any further discussion? Ready for the question? All those in...
We have these problems because NIMS calls our SOPs something different than what the SOPs really is. So, although this is our SOPs, we call it because we submit a SOPs to them for approval, which is this doesn't include all this. We call this our operations handbook, which contains our policies. It's not really our SOPs.
Now, are we submitting that to NOAA Fisheries or NIMS?
No, this is...
Neither.
Okay. Operations handbook. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
15.
15 opposed. No opposition. Abstentions. One abstention. The motion carries. Okay. We have one more agenda item today, right?
Can I ask one?
What we'll do
is we'll ask each of our SSC members to provide us with a bio and tell them we're going to put it on our web so that they do the bio instead of us taking their resume and doing something.
Okay, we're on to the 4 o'clock.